Joshua chapter 6. The book of Joshua is all about receiving God's promises. And I think we're going to keep seeing this each week. I think we're going to see ingredients that are part of receiving God's promises, the things that are involved. Because the promises for them is the promised land. And it didn't just happen automatically. The Israelites took 40 years to get through the wilderness, a journey that should have took something like 2 weeks. It was their lack of faith that made it last longer than it had to. Keep that in mind for the end of the study this evening. It was their lack of faith that made it last so long. God miraculously has parted where we are now in Joshua. God miraculously parted the Jordan River. The people have crossed into the promised land, and they're ready to take their first challenge in receiving, in taking what God has for them. Last week we ended in chapter 5 where Joshua, we kind of think Joshua was scouting out Jericho, and he meets this interesting, mysterious fellow who is called the commander of the Lord's army, or the captain. I think King James is the captain of the Lord's hosts. Joshua bowed and worshiped before this mysterious figure. And I believe that Joshua chapter 6 kind of picks up on that moment. I'm not sure there's a 3-day lag between chapter 5 and chapter 6. I think it moves one thing right into the other. I think this person is still present. Verse 1. Now Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. Jericho was quite an imposing and important fortress city in the ancient world. It sat in the middle of some important trade routes. This is the Jordan River, and there was a trade route that ran along the valley of the Jordan River, as well as people coming through the valley, both from the land of Canaan and into the land of Moab. And here's ancient Jericho sitting kind of right at the crossroads of this place. It is known as the oldest city in the world. From where we've been at, they've been camped at the plains of Moab, and now they've moved across the Jordan River to a camp spot that was known as Gilgal, and that's over here is where Gilgal is. And here's ancient Jericho up against the cliffs at the and here's what we believe is the ancient city of Jericho. We saw over the last couple of weeks that the people of Jericho were well aware of the Israelites. They weren't surprised by these people. Remember, this is a mass of 2 million people that are migrating through the wilderness. 2 million people. A fighting force of 600,000. People wake up and take notice. This wasn't like they were suddenly surprised. Oh my, who are these people? There's no surprise here. We saw last week about how they had heard that God had parted the Red Sea. That wasn't a fable. It wasn't a makeup thing. It was something that hit the newspapers, that the Red Sea had parted and these people had left Egypt. They were aware of how the Israelites had wiped out the kingdoms, the Amorite kingdoms of Sihon and Og. They were aware of this. But up to this point, they had been safely on the other side of the Jordan River. They were aware. We saw a couple weeks back how they were aware of the Israelite spies being around. They knew that they were in town. They showed up at Rahab. The king's men showed up at Rahab's house and said, "Where are they? We know they're here." Verse 2, "And the Lord said to Joshua, 'See, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor.'" The Lord said, it's all caps, it's Yahweh says this. I think it's possible that this commander that Joshua had been talking to, the one he had worshipped before, the one who told him to take his sandals off, he's on holy ground, that this is the person who is still talking. And I believe that this is what we call a pre-incarnate theophany of Jesus. This is Jesus showing up before he gets born on earth in human flesh. He shows up several times, quite a few times in the Old Testament, and he is known. There is a person, a specific person in the Old Testament that you can link to, a person who was identified as Yahweh, but who is referred to as the angel of Yahweh. And we believe this is Jesus Christ before he took on human flesh. He is the only person who has existed before he was born. Mormon theology is what has crept up into our stupid American thinking. It's the Mormons who teach that the gods have babies in heaven and then the babies come and take human flesh, and the craziest, wildest ideas. That is not biblical. The Bible teaches that you began when you were conceived. You didn't start in heaven and then take on flesh. Jesus is the only one who has done that. We believe this is Jesus showing up. Verse 3. He says, "You shall march around the city, all you men of war. You shall go all around the city once. This you shall do 6 days." They're told to march around the city. The city is something along the magnitude of 8 to 9 acres. Now, I guess the real estate appraisers among us would have a concept of how big, how much property this is. I'm not good at acreage. How many of you have been down to Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa? Their main property is 10 acres. From Sunflower to MacArthur, from the gully to... From Sunflower to MacArthur, from Fairview to the gully. That's about 10 acres. That's about the size of this property. You and I might think, well, that's not a pretty small city, but there's some heft here to this city. If Israel uses all of its troops, and it's possible that they're doing this, I don't see anything that says that they're not. Remember, they have 600,000 men. This property is what, 3 to 5 acres, something like that? So like twice the size of this property. 600,000 people marching around it. Okay? They're surrounding that sucker. Okay? Make sure you get the picture in your head. Verse 4. And seven priests, this is part of God's instructions, seven priests shall bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. But the seventh day you shall march around the city seven times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. Ram's horns. This is what you call the shofar. Nobody's in the front row. I can't spit on anybody. How about that? It's pretty good, huh? That's because I then got a music education degree. That's what they're blowing. Don't think Louis Armstrong or Dizzy Gillespie or something like that. You want to be thinking these ram's horns. Verse 5, it shall come to pass when they make a long blast of the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout, then the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up every man straight before him. Now that's only the instruction for that last seventh day. Verse 6, then Joshua the son of Nun called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and let seven priests bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord. Now the Ark of the Covenant, you know, this is the Indiana Jones thing. It's some people have this idea that it's out there in all of its golden glory with the angels in the top and all this kind of stuff. No, whenever they carried this thing, it was covered up. It had a couple of coverings that were made for this thing. So all the people are seeing is this box-like structure with two long poles and the priest carrying this thing. That's what they're seeing. Verse 7, and he said to the people, proceed and march around the city, and let him who is armed advance before the ark of the Lord. So it was, when Joshua had spoken to the people, that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets. And the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord followed them. The armed men went before the priests who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard came after the Ark while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. Now, it mentions armies before and after. There is a prescribed marching order to the tribes of Israel as they would go on their marches. And we get this from the book of Numbers, from Numbers chapter 2. That's one of those chapters that you go to sleep on when you're reading it, when you're reading through the Bible. Numbers chapter 2 is one of those. But keep in mind, there's a reason for it. There's a reason that you're given all these numbers and stuff, because this is all about how the nation was organized. They weren't this mass chaos. They had been this horrible mass of slaves. And through the wilderness, God trained them to be a fighting force. There was organization, and they went in order. This was the order of their armies. Judah would lead out, then Issachar, Zebulun, Reuben, Simeon, Gad. Then would come the Ark, which would be held by the priests. And then Ephraim, Manasseh, Benjamin, Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. There was organization. It's kind of interesting. It's like the Ark's right in the center of it, like they're protecting the Ark, kind of the way I've always kind of thought about it. Verse 10, now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, you shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, shout, then you shall shout. Now, so for 6 days, everybody is silent. The only noise that you're hearing, I get to do it again. The only noise you're hearing, that's the only noise. 600,000 fighting men marching silently. Verse 11, so he had the Ark of the Lord circle the city, going around it once. Then they came into the camp and lodged in the camp. They came to the camp. They go back to Gilgal. It's a mile or two away. The people in Jericho, that they might have been expecting them to attack after marching around the city. But instead, these people go quietly back to their camp. Now, I don't know that they were necessarily sitting up on the walls going, you bunch of idiots, who do you think you are? You know, you can't get us, you can't touch us, you know, and all this kind of stuff. I'm not sure that that's what's happening. Think about the effect this is having on the city of Jericho. Remember the things that Rahab said in Joshua 2. As soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. Our hearts are melting because of what we've heard, that how God works in you. After Joshua brought them across when the Jordan, because the Jordan River parted, and they went across the Jordan River, and suddenly they're on the Jericho side of the Jordan River. It says in Joshua 5:1, so it was when all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard that Yahweh had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their heart melted and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. I don't think they're sitting on the city walls going, nah. I imagine these people are freaked out. 600,000 people quietly marching around, and they go home. Verse 12. Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the Ark of the Lord. Then seven priests bearing seven trumpets of ram's horns. Should I blow it again? Before the Ark of the Lord went on continually and blew with the trumpets. The armed men went before them, but the rear guard came after the Ark of the Lord while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. And the second day they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. So they did 6 days. So this is the same thing they repeat for 6 days. They come out, this mass of people, they're blowing the trumpets. Quietly the people are walking around the city and then go back. 6 days, day two, day three, day four, day five, day six, verse 15. And it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early about the dawning of the day and marched around the city seven times in the same manner. On that day only they marched around the city seven times. Now, I don't know, maybe something around 3 hours to take these people seven times around the city, something like that. I don't know. Do you see all the sevens that were in here? Do you notice all the seven, 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 seven? There were seven priests who were blowing seven trumpets, and they did all of this for 7 days. They go around the city seven times at the end. Why all the sevens? Could be lots of reasons. A very simple one is that seven seems to be God's number of perfection. That's when the world was complete, when he was done on the seventh day. And so a simplistic way of looking at this is that this is going to be God's perfect judgment on Jericho. Maybe you could look at it this way. This is God's perfect plan for Israel in the battle. Just some ideas. I know some people go off and will talk about the connections with seven. Is there any other place you hear about seven trumpets? Revelation, yeah. Yeah, I know Chuck Missler has got some fascinating coincidences, parallels between the book of Joshua and the book of Revelation. We'll just stay here. Verse 16. And the seventh time it happened, when the priests blew the trumpets, that Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city." So I think we should all shout. What do you think we should shout? How about hooah? Does that sound like it? Should we do that? Let's do that. Okay, one, two, three.
Hooah!
That is not good enough. Here we go. One, two, three.
Hooah!
Yeah, and we're not anywhere near 600,000. I mean, and the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, it and all who are in it. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. Now, it mentions the city is doomed to destruction. The Hebrew word is cherem. It means a devoted thing, something that's dedicated. Now, that doesn't sound like destruction, but actually there is a concept when it comes to things sacrificed that they are devoted to God. They are given to God. And how do you give things to God? How do you give a lamb to God? You cut its throat. You pour out its life. It dies. So there is this, that's this connection here. Things dedicated. And here it carries the idea of things that will be banned, things that will be appointed to utter destruction. The whole city here will be appointed to utter destruction. In other words, hands off, no souvenirs. Nobody pocket anything here. This city in particular, no souvenirs. This city is devoted to destruction. Now he mentions Rahab, and again, we saw a couple weeks ago how Joshua's spies ended up at the house of Rahab, a prostitute. She's not just an innkeeper. Some people will try to water this down. She is a prostitute. The word that's used, she is a prostitute. Old Testament, New Testament, the words, she's a prostitute. But Rahab could see that God was at work. And she wanted to be on God's side. She wanted to be on God's side. So she hid the spies and she made a deal with them. She said, "I'll hide you. Will you please do me a little favor? Don't kill me when you come back. In fact, maybe don't kill me and don't kill my family when you come back." And the spies said, "No problem, as long as you didn't tell anybody what happened here. And then you hang a red cord out the window so we can tell where you are." Well, here it's about to happen. And Joshua tells everybody, "Leave Rahab alone. Keep her safe." Verse 18. "And you, by all means, abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it." Now, It is kind of ironic that he uses this word, achar, for trouble. To stir up. Why it's unique, why it's interesting, coincidence, is because there is a play on words here in the Hebrew. There will be a fellow who will break the rule. There will be one fellow who will break the rule. And his name isn't Achar, his name is Achan. Very close. And he will be called, known as the troubler of Israel. I'm going to talk about trouble just for a minute. Something just to chew on a little bit. One of the reasons God is bringing Israel into this land, it's not just about giving Israel goodies. It's not just about giving them Christmas presents under the tree. There's a very serious thing happening when Israel comes into the land. Some people look at what Israel does, how they are told to wipe out entire cities, level them to the ground, things that we call genocide today. God considered this judgment. God told Abraham 400 years earlier, he hinted that his descendants would end up in Egypt, end up in a distant land, and be slaves, and there would be a day they would come back, and it says, in the fourth generation they shall return here. This is what God says to Abraham: for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. The hint is this: God is giving these people a chance to turn around. He's giving the Amorites, the Canaanites, the people that live in this land, he's giving them a chance to turn around. But God sees down the road and he sees that there's going to be a day when he's going to have it up to here with them. And so what Israel is about, what Israel is doing here, is bringing judgment. They are being used by God to judge these people. And God says, don't get yourselves into trouble by touching the things that are bringing the judgment. There's a reason God's judging these people. And he's saying, when you come into this land, I don't want you touching this stuff. I want you to wipe it out. I want you to get rid of it. There's a verse in Colossians 3. It says, therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth. I'm talking about your body. Put to death fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desires, covetousness, which is idolatry. Look at verse 6. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience. See, God's not done bringing judgment. What Israel was a part of was a moment in time. And there is a day when God will bring judgment on this earth again. Those are the accursed things. Fornication, that's sex outside of marriage. Uncleanness, passion, evil desires, covetousness, you know, wanting more stuff, more and more and more stuff. And just like God warned Israel, don't touch this stuff. This is the reason I'm bringing judgment. I think God would just love for us to wake up. You know, it's hard, gang, because we live in the world. And we are surrounded all the time by garbage. And sometimes we get just a little bit too used to it. When these are the very things that God is going to judge one day. Gang, be careful about touching stuff. I don't know if you have seen the commercial. There's this commercial on TV about a dog that's trying to protect its bone. It's called Trouble. A guy singing a thing called Trouble. you know, this is all about about teaching a dog to protect his bone the right way. But you know what, gang? Sometimes we're trying to protect the wrong things. And we're only causing ourselves trouble. And we try to bury it. We try to hide it. We try to do everything that we can to we can hold on to that bone. And you know what? Some of those bones are the reason Jesus is coming back to bring judgment. Trouble. Trouble. Don't trouble yourself. Verse 19. He says, but all the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. The metal things are going to go into the recycle bin. Everything else is going to get wiped out. No, I don't think that means that they're going to keep the golden idols as golden idols. I think they're going to get recycled. But they're not going to go into the hands of the people. They're going to be going into the hands of the Lord. Verse 20. So the people shouted when the priest blew the trumpets. Let's shout again. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Oh, man, you've fallen asleep again. 1, 2, 3. Much better. So the people shouted when the priest blew the trumpets, and it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout that the wall fell down flat. Then all the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. It mentions the wall fell down flat. Archaeologists have found, and you're going to see this in the movie, so I don't want to take a lot of time about this. There is a retaining wall around the base of the ancient city. And inside of that retaining wall, it's all filled with dirt, and the city was built on top of that platform. On top of that platform, there were two sets of walls. Those are the ones that fell. We're going to see that in a minute. And it mentions that the people went up. It's an important little detail. They didn't go down into the city. They went up into the city. Why? Because it's you're going to see. It fits the archaeological evidence. Verse 21, and they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox and sheep and donkey with the edge of the sword. They destroyed all. Some people have a hard time with this, but gang, it's frankly because you don't understand the Canaanites. These people, these are wicked, wicked people. One archaeologist wrote this, exterminating the Canaanite in the time of Joshua was not a question of destroying innocent people. It was a question of destroying or being destroyed, separating or being contaminated, being quarantined from the plague, or having the plague destroy everyone. This is a matter of survival. There's a reason behind all of this. Verse 22. But Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the country, go into the harlot's house, and from there bring out the woman and all that she has, as you swore to her. And the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brothers, and all that she had. So they brought out all her relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel. So they went in and got her. Now, the Jewish tradition says that one of the two spies was named Salmon, or I think his first name was Tim. And he would marry Rahab, and their offspring would include, a couple generations down the road, King David, and eventually Jesus, spring from Rahab. It mentions they left them outside the camp. That's not a permanent thing. That's a temporary thing. They're being quarantined. Eventually they will come into the camp, as you'll see in a few verses. But they burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Only the gold and silver, the vessels of bronze and iron, they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. They burned the city with fire. You're going to see that in the archaeology. Verse 25. And Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, her father's household, and all that she had. So she dwells in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Then Joshua charged them at that time, saying, cursed be the man before the Lord who rises up and builds this city of Jericho. He shall lay its foundation with his firstborn, and with his youngest he shall set up its gates. So the Lord was with Joshua. His fame spread throughout the country. Now, it mentions cursed be the man. He pronounces a curse to anyone who wants to rebuild the city. God is so sick of Jericho. God never wants to see Jericho again. So there's this curse. It goes for 500 years before somebody takes on the challenge. It's during the days of Ahab, Jezebel, and Elijah that a fellow named Hiel of Bethel built Jericho. He laid its foundation with Abiram, his firstborn, and with his youngest son, Segub, he set up the gates according to the word which he had spoken through Joshua, the son of Nun. This man ignored the warning and went ahead and rebuilt Jericho, but he lost, it was a high price. He lost two sons in the building of this city. And you know, Jericho is around today. Verse 25, just one last thought. Joshua spared Rahab. I just want to end with this idea of faith and promises. Faith is counting on God even though you don't see Him and even though you don't get it. That's what faith is. Faith is counting on Him even though I don't get it. You may think you are unique in this church, that you are the only person in this church who doesn't see God. I got news for you. No one in here gets it completely. No one in here understands fully everything happening to their lives. Hebrews 11:1. Faith is the confidence that what we hope for will actually happen. It gives us assurance about things we cannot see. Faith, it's important. The reason it took the Israelites so long to get into the promised land, I'm not going to read all this, Hebrews chapter 3 says, it was because they didn't believe. It took them 40 years because of their unbelief. They were thinking, we can't handle the giants. God said, oh, yes, you can. And they said, we don't trust you. They didn't go in because of unbelief. And yet, here it says, Hebrews 11:30, by faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled but for 7 days. Now, how did that happen? Is that because, like, all the prayer warriors gathered together on the Monday morning prayer meeting, and they all held hands, and they said, let's conjure up some faith. And then they finally won't fall down. No. No. This is how it happens. God said, do this silly thing and walk around silently. Blow the horns. Do it another day. Do it another day. And on the seventh day, do it seven times. What an idiotic thing. But God said, do it. And they did it. That was their faith. Because they trusted that God knew what He was doing. By faith, the walls fell down. Not because they had some awesome cosmic faith power, but because they obeyed what God asked them to do, even though it didn't make sense. By faith, Rahab did not perish. How did that work? Well, because she saw that God was in this thing. And she stepped out and did something. Her faith got her out in front of the group and said, I think God's with you guys. I want to hang with you. Because of her stepping out, she didn't perish. Hebrews 11:6 says, it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to Him must believe that God exists and that He rewards those who sincerely seek Him. I don't know what you're struggling with. I don't know what you're wondering about. We all have issues. It all comes down to this. Part of taking the land is I have to trust Him. I have to trust Him. I don't see Him. I don't understand everything that's happening, but I trust Him. That's a step. That's one of the steps in taking the promised land. Now, I think with this, let's watch our movie. You deserve your movie. You earned your movie.